Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You guys, I am so excited. My new course on behavior, the Practical Behavior Approach, is officially done and ready to go. Enrollment is only open until April 30th. And if you are someone who is supporting a child with frequent challenging behaviors, listen in because this course is for you. This course was designed for any teacher, special ed or gen ed, clinician or parent, working with a child with frequent negative behaviors. This course is going to prepare you with a comprehensive toolbox. You're going to have all the tools you need to prevent problem behaviors, respond when problem behaviors happen, and to build those missing skills. We go in depth into why behavior happens, looking at contributing factors like diagnosis, trauma, anxiety, and sensory need. This is truly a cohesive course where strategies are rooted in the science of applied behavior analysis, but also rooted in trauma-informed practices. So you're going to have both perspectives to develop this really robust framework of strategies that is truly going to be effective. So if you are feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, or out of answers on how to support your kids, click on the link in the show notes and learn a little bit more about this course and how the training and all of the downloads and tools are going to really help support you on this journey to helping your child be successful. I can't fully express how excited I am to get this course in your hands. Click on the link in show notes. Let me know if you have any questions. And when you get started, let me know how it goes.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper Podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism.
Welcome back to the Autism Helper Podcast. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Joe Lakovich, who is the founder of Failure Free Reading. Dr. Joe has over 30 years experience in the world of literacy and education. He is a former teacher, school psychologist, university professor, and special education director. We go in depth in this episode into why readers are struggling. Our kids that are spending year after year in intervention program after intervention program and still aren't reading, what's going on? Dr. Joe breaks all of this down. He breaks down what's wrong with many current reading programs and how we can approach teaching reading and especially reading comprehension differently. This whole episode's really about reading comprehension because as you'll hear in a few minutes, that's really at the root of why our learners are struggling. So let's go ahead and hear from Dr. Joe from Failure Free Reading all about reading comprehension and how to really reach those struggling readers. Hi, Dr. Joe. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Sasha. What a pleasure. I am honored to be on your podcast.
Well, I'm excited to talk about what's actually one of my favorite topics, and that is reading comprehension. I love talking about literacy. I think this is something not discussed enough, especially for our kids with autism and unique learning needs. But in particular, reading comprehension is always that challenge. Why is this skill so important, and why is it so difficult for some learners?
Well, first of all, I think we have to put it in perspective. I'm 30 years, 30 plus years in the field. That's been my primary research topic. But there is such a broad range of opinion. And let me just share with you this. Here's my introductory pop quiz to you, Sasha.
Oh, I'm nervous.
You ready? I think you can handle it, though. In fact, I know you can handle it. I'll be extremely positive. Here we go. Reading comprehension. Reading comprehension. It's not a trick quiz. How many words did you just hear?
Two.
Okay. And that's what most people would say. But do you know that to those who are in the world of reading research, believe it or not, many reading researchers, and especially those who are influencers, actually hear three words. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. And let me tell you what they heard. They heard reading and comprehension. They heard reading and comprehension. And what I'm basically saying is that they hear reading as a separate topic from that of comprehension. And to them, when they think of reading, they think of word recognition. That's not where I'm coming from. When I hear reading comprehension, I hear two words. And my research and work and my material, everything that I'm doing is based towards one definition of reading, which is gaining meaning from the printed page, as opposed to simply recognizing words.
And those are two very different things.
Totally different. And therefore, if you're going on a word recognition only path, as opposed to gaining meaning from the printed page path, in many ways, you get two totally different outcomes. I can give you an example if you'd like.
Sure.
Well, to your audience, to your parents, to your teachers out there, who are involved in teaching word recognition, you put a page in front of the student, and you'll find that the student has mastered word recognition and gets 95, maybe even 100% of the words contained on the page correct. But why don't you ask me what that but is?
I know it's coming.
Yeah, you do, don't you? But when you listen to them read aloud, they don't pause at commas. They don't stop at periods. They read with a monotone expressionless voice. And even though they get 95 to 100% of the words right, you ask them what they've read and they look you dead in the eye and say, what, Sasha?
No idea.
That's right.
Know. Yeah.
They say, I don't know. Because, because they are... they think reading is getting the words right as opposed to gaining meaning from the printed page. Now, on the flip side of that, my kids, my outcomes are always judged by, when looking at oral reading, they're always judged by, are they reading with expression? And do you know why I ask, are they reading with expression, Sasha?
Because that links to comprehension.
Absolutely. If a student is reading with comprehension, with expression, if they're reading with expression, then they automatically are reading with comprehension. So if you're looking for some type of red flag as to appropriateness of approach or am I on the right track? And you're getting the former rather than the latter, you got to change.
You know, I see this a lot. Obviously, most of my work is with kids with autism, but I know this was with kids with and without a diagnosis. I see exactly what you said, that robotic, monotone reading and teachers that are sometimes very proud of, oh my gosh, he's reading on the fourth grade level. And I'm like, but he's really not though, because he's not understanding anything he's reading.
He's recognizing fourth grade words on a graded word list of increasing complexity, but he's not
exactly
reading.
Yeah. And that's a misunderstanding.
Oh, it's a terrible misunderstanding. And it's one that I've been fighting for 35 years. And if you look at the research, I ain't winning. And when I look at interventions out there, and I've been, you know, I'm a former classroom teacher, university professor, school special ed director, and I've been actively involved in one particular research project, and that is, all things being equal, what do you do with a kid who can't read a lick? And you know, my research, you know, I've got over 2 million hours of direct reading instruction across the United States. I've worked with legislatures, state legislatures. I've done work with the Department of Education, involved in some of the biggest longitudinal reading research programs. But my argument is on the notion of if you're going to look for an intervention, then you have to look at, is it an RD or is it a CS intervention? And I think I've intrigued you with that too.
Yeah, define those. I'm waiting.
Oh, okay. Well, 99.9% of the interventions, in my belief, fall into the category of RD. And RD falls into the category of remediation of the deficit. So it's based on the premise that there's something wrong with the kid internally, and we're going to find out what's wrong with the kid, and we're going to remediate that deficit. And by the way, when we're done, I'll share with you what I call the three characteristics of chronically failing, chronically struggling kids. And you know, I've worked with kids with IQs as low as 45. I've worked emotionally disturbed kids on the spectrum. LD, you name it. Those are all my kids, and they all have the three characteristics. But so RD is the remediation of the deficit. Now, I know you're going to ask, well, Dr. Joe, if what is CS?
You
Sasha?
Knew I was going to ask that. That was my next question.
That's a great question. I knew we were going to hit it off. CS stands for capitalize on strength. Capitalize on strength. And that gets to my first of three characteristics that my research has found pertaining to why do we have chronically failing kids. And in my research, I've said that they're ND, they're ED, and they're LD. ND, ED, and LD. And ND, by the way, I've recently changed. It used to be PD, but now I've made it ND because I think it's a better fit and it gets me out of a little bit of trouble. But ND stands for the phrase neurologically diverse. Neurologically mm-hmm. diverse. And the truth of the matter is that you know firsthand as a practitioner or a parent, as just a general individual walking the face of this planet, if there's one universal fact that you can take to the bank, it's that we're all different. Would you agree with that?
For sure.
And if that's the case, then we all bring with us a set of weaknesses. Yes?
Yep.
But we also bring with us a set of what?
Strengths. Coming full
that's
circle.
That's right. That's right. And my research has found that when you capitalize on the strength, all of a sudden things get exciting. In fact, my philosophy is that we're underestimating the ability level of our chronically failing kids, that the enemy is not the student, the parent, the teacher, or the administrator, that the real enemy is the instructional approach. And you change the approach and you'll change that performance outcome. What do you think of that?
Sounds great. And sounds like we'd also be, not to go into behavior here, but that's where a lot of problem behaviors come too. If we can connect with kids over things that they're interested in and good at, all those problem behaviors can kind of disappear as well.
Yeah, I'd like to kiss you on the forehead for that one. When I started this, I started the failure-free reading methodology. And by the way, the reason why I called it failure-free reading was When I first started my company 35 plus years ago, I had it was my wife, myself, and three children under the age of 10, and about $750 in our pocket. And I said, I want to make a bigger difference than in the classroom, and I think I've developed a methodology and approach that seems to work, and I want to risk it. And she said, what's the worst thing to happen? I said, we'll live in a trailer down by the river. And And so far, we're not in the trailer. There have been times where I thought we'd be really close. In fact, that seemed pretty exciting. But, you know, life is a lot of things, but it's never dull. So when I started to grow the company, I would call a school, cold call, or a parent or whatever, and I'd say, I'd like to do a live demonstration at your building, but I'll only do it under two conditions. And Sasha, I know you're also going to ask, well, Dr. Joe, what are the two conditions?
Got good cliffhanger.
How am I doing? Well, the first condition is I really want to work with the worst kid you got. Now, I don't mean worse any other way than academically they've tried everything and they're not seeing any outcome. Mm-hmm. So that caught their attention. Very few people would say they want to come in and do a live demonstration with the worst kid they got. And then the second, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Ask me what that second condition is.
What's the second condition?
If they don't see dramatic change in confidence, ability, and comprehension within 30 minutes, I'll walk out the door and they'll never see me again.
Ooh. It's a good pitch.
Now, well, it's you know, Will Rogers once said that he never met a man that he didn't like. But, you know, he also had a phrase that was even more exciting. It's one that I abide by. You know what it is?
What?
It ain't bragging if you've done it. It ain't bragging if you've done it. So yeah. I can tell you in all honesty that I have probably given this demonstration close to 1,000 times across the United States, from maximum security prisons to inner city to high school to elementary school to urban areas. And ask me how many times I've walked out the door.
How many times have you walked out?
A big fat zero, a big fat
That's
zero.
Amazing.
And so when I saw this, what I saw was not only was there a dramatic change in their ability. Now, did I cure anybody in 30 minutes? Absolutely not. But did I give hope? Did I give show them that they can do faster, they can do higher, and they can do more, as opposed to the special ed mantra, slower, lower, and less? Yes, absolutely. But the other thing that I found more than anything else was that what I had created was a vehicle in which to dramatically change the confidence and the ability of these kids. Because what I found was they were their own worst enemies. Mm-hmm. You know, many, many times we talk about motivation and why reading is motivation is an important component to reading. I know you've heard it. I know that you talk about it probably in your courses, but you know, as a personal aside, I have five children who are now adult, and we're getting ready for our 14th grandchild, which is very, very exciting. But all five of my kids went to Title I schools, and I wanted that to occur, and they all did well academically. Now, let me ask you something, Sasha. If I walked into a building and all I heard was how well Tess is, how well Alex doing, how well Frank, Jessica, or Rachel are doing, what a joy they're having in a classroom and they're getting their A's and their B's, how much motivation did it take for any of my kids to go to school on a daily basis when all they're going to be told is how wonderful they are?
I mean, I think they're sold, right?
They're sold, and it doesn't require much motivation. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. But now let's flip it. Let's flip it to I'm at the University of South Carolina. I'm on the graduate faculty, special education. I'm running a summer program for kids with pronounced reading difficulties. And in that section, there's this one little boy who's comes in every day, 4 hours a day with a baseball cap on his head and never takes a cap off. And he intrigues me. So I start to find out that he's 7 years old. He's a rising first grader. He has already been retained in kindergarten. He's a virtual non-reader. And by the way, I want to share with a misnomer. There is really no such thing as a non-reader. all kids can read some, but some, it may be only half a dozen words. In comparison to their peers, they are non-readers because they're so far behind. But so I find out that this is his last shot. And if he doesn't do well in the summer clinic, he's going to be retained again in first grade. So I asked this question. Why is he wearing the baseball cap? And, I ask this whenever I go across the country and whenever I talk to people, I'll ask the questions, teachers, parents. And a lot of them will say, well, he's wearing the cap for security. He's wearing the cap to hide his eyes. But you know, Sasha, he's wearing the cap for a more utilitarian reason.
Why?
He's wearing that cap to hide something. And you know what he's hiding? He's hiding the fact that his hair is falling out in clumps, that he has alopecia. Mm. Want to know what causes it?
Stress.
Yeah. So here's a kid that wanted to do so bad, so badly, so well. He created a victim, and the victim was himself. In that same group, I had an 8-year-old girl with an ulcer. Again, tremendous reading difficulty, wanting to go to school every day, knowing that she's going to fail every day. Now, you also have a situation where I call Lockovich's Law. In Lockovich's Law, because I was a one-time teacher of emotionally disturbed kids, self-contained, in elementary and in middle school. And in Lockovich's Law, it's real simple. You've got a kid who is failing every day, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, correct? You know what I'm talking about, correct? Okay. Feeling like a fool, yes?
Yeah.
Perhaps feeling like an ass?
Yeah.
Then there's going to come a great and glorious day when he starts acting like an ass. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times he does that for a specific purpose. And you know what the purpose is? It's a hell of a lot easier to get thrown out of class and go one-on-one with the AP, with the assistant principal, than it is to continue to sit in there making a fool out of yourself in front of your peers.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I found is that our kids are their own worst enemies. That in my treatment, I found that one of the unique features of my program is that we have a diagnostic prescriptive in which we look at, and we're a reading for meaning program. If the kids are not reading with expression from the material that we're giving them, then they're not reading by our standard. So we have 11 entry points ranging from, we're teaching critical academic vocabulary that is most important to academic success. And I'll talk to that in a moment too. We have a series of graded passages. It's a closed reading technique, CLOZE. And the kids keep on going until they find the passage that matches their reading comprehension level. It could be first grade, second grade, third, fourth. Does that all make sense, Sasha?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Now, you know, and I know as a former special ed teacher, if there's one universal in the diagnostic prescriptive, teachers are taught over and over and over again that they're to find three levels of their kids. Does this trigger any memory banks
on
you?
It does, yeah.
Okay. Here's your other quiz. Can you tell me those three levels?
We have our frustration level,
yeah,
right? Independent level, and our, I'm blanking on, working or?
Instructional level.
Instruction, there we go, yeah.
You done good, Sasha. Okay, and what are in every school of education and in every reading program, what do we continually drill into the minds of the practitioner? Of all things, what are they to avoid?
Once you find those
three levels, what level are you to avoid at all times?
Avoid the frustration level.
You're told that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. In my material, we have actually close to 72 stories, three different types of programs. We have one called Joseph's Readers, which is 27 stories teaching kids from beginning reading on four themes all the way up to fifth grade level. And then we have Verbal Master, which is an accelerated vocabulary program, four levels there, sixth, seventh grade, eighth, ninth, 10th, 11th, ACT, SAT. That's the program that we're doing with chronically failing kids for the state of North Carolina. The state legislature contracted with us to do a pilot, which is exciting. And then the third level, which is even more exciting for a lot of your parents, is what I call my life skills program. It's 24 stories based on four themes, independent living, getting a driver's license, getting the facts on drugs, and getting a job. And that's for kids and adults 16 to 25, you know, the population that I'm discussing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are, you know, high school and adult kids on the spectrum who just need something else. Mm-hmm. So getting back to what I was saying, because we are a reading attitude adjustment program, and showing these kids that they can do faster, higher, and more. And because of the way in which we've structured the material and the methodology, we actually start our kids at the frustration level. We start them at the point where they say, this is too hard, I can't do it.
And why do you do that?
Well, and that's a good question. But what is the same kid going to say when 20 to 30 minutes later, they're reading the exact same passage that they said was too hard and telling me that it's either just right or too easy? And all of a sudden, what does that start to do? What does that trigger in that kid? One, that perhaps I'm wrong, and then it triggers access to the greatest educational theory known to mankind. And I know you're going to ask me, what is the greatest educational theory known to mankind, John?
Yes.
Dr. Joe. Are you ready?
Yes.
The little train theory. And do you remember the little train theory?
I think I can.
And then I could. So the only way we're going to reach these kids is that you don't want to have, in particular, middle school kids reading who are at a frustration level of perhaps below second and third grade or lower. What's it going to do to their dignity, pride, and self-respect if they're sitting in front of screens that smack of dancing bears and bunny rabbits?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, it is awful. And yet we continue to do that under the guise of, well, there's no viable alternative. Well,
yeah.
That's not true. That's just simply not true. And you know, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing today. That's why I'm talking to you. Again, it keeps on getting that if you're going to continue to put on your instructional blinders and feel that the only way to fly is through the remediation of a supposed deficit, you're never going to give these kids an opportunity to demonstrate their strengths. And so I'll give you an example. My ND, my neurologically diverse, used to be PD. But before I tell you that, let me just share with you this, what I believe. I believe that if there's one universal in the teaching of reading, that it's that nobody agrees on how to teach reading. that you put the 12 leading experts in a room. You put an armed guard at the door, a single exit, and you tell them they can't come out until they have a universal definition of what reading is and how it should be taught, then they'd starve to death before they ever got Would you agree?
Yeah, and I think that makes it really, really hard for teachers and parents too, because it's like, you know, you're told conflicting things, or who do you listen to?
I'm going to give you some ways to get out of that mess. Okay.
Yeah.
And the first thing is to dispel this notion of RD and go back to what I said about PD. Okay. And that is, right now, PD is a phrase that I coined, and it stands for the term phonetically deaf. Mm-hmm. And what I'm basically saying is that there are large segments, what I call 30%, the 30 percenters. 30% of the kids are not going to respond to the intervention, whatever that intervention is. So in this case, in special ed in particular, would you say that phonics and the teaching of phonics and letter sounds has a dominant role in the beginning teaching?
Yeah, most definitely.
Okay. Now, why, Sasha? I'm going to ask you, why do we stress such time and energy on that?
I think it's because we're taught that those are the foundations and that's the quote-unquote way to do it. And especially in early childhood, you're like, well, I'll just start there kind of thinking.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, that's what you hear over and over and over and over again. And you even hear the phrase, the science of reading.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And people believe that is, and again, what did I, before I get to this, because I'm getting into a world of hurt anyhow. I got people that want to take me out into the square and just pistol with me. But I'm going to say it anyhow. And parents, I ain't saying it if I can't prove it. So you just remember that. But I'm going to make this point. I'm not saying phonics is bad. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the teaching of phonics is bad. My argument is only with when do you start it? And for some kids, phonics is not a good beginning reading process.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you've got a kid and you do man can fan tan and you go to the kid and he says elephant, the chances are good he hasn't gotten down the concept of rhyme. He's confused as to that, and letter sounds initially aren't his thing.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
For sure.
Okay. So if you've got in the RD philosophy, this is what happens. The kid's taught, you try to teach letters and letter sounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the kid doesn't do well. In fact, he does terribly. So the next thing is he goes into a tier two intervention. Correct?
Yep.
And guess what he gets? Small group, more letters and letter sounds.
Yeah.
Now, when he doesn't do well there, what do? We put him in a tier three intervention. Right. And guess what he gets then? He gets one-on-one more letter sounds and usually the label of dyslexia.
Yeah.
Well, I don't buy it. Now, let me tell you how the Dr. Joe philosophy is. I'm going to give you three words. I'm looking at a kid who's stuck in phonics, stuck in skills. Now, what do I mean by stuck in skills? All right, I'll tell you two things. I'm going to teach you how to ride a bike one of two ways, okay? Both ways are equally effective. This is my analogy to the whole process. Both ways are equally effective. Fair enough, Sasha?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Way number one, it's Saturday morning. You're going to learn how to ride a bike. I'm going to take you to the garage, and I'm going to have every individual bike part laid out on the floor. And then I'm going to start to drill you in every bike part. Wheels, spokes, handlebars, gears, brake pedals. Yeah, you know where I'm going. Yeah. And Sasha, I don't care if it's hours, days, weeks, months, years. You ain't getting on that damn bike until you can tell me about wheels, spokes, handlebars, gears, brake pedals. Now, second method. What's the second way I can teach you how to ride the bike?
You just get on the bike.
And be alongside of you and teach you how to ride that bike. And as you start to experience what it feels like to ride that bike, then I'll start to tell you about wheels, spokes, handlebars, gears, brake pedals.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Thank you. The first is called a skills-first approach. The second is called a process-first approach. I am a believer, and my methodology is all set on the notion of a process-first approach. I set the conditions that allow kids to experience what it feels like to read for meaning from the very first lesson on.
Love that. And, motivation, confidence is all there.
Yeah, and if the kid doesn't get phonics, which is auditory, correct? Mm-hmm. What am I providing that kid with? A viable what?
Alternative to that?
Which is visual. Yeah. Let me give you, to the people out there that are thinking, this guy's a heretic. Doesn't he know that you absolutely, positively have to have, you have to teach letters and letter sounds before you can ever begin to read for meaning? That sound familiar?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give you, and I say it all the time, but I'll say it again here. I'm going to give you three words to prove that statement or that philosophy wrong. And I'll say even more. I'll give you two. You give me the third. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay. Dick and?
One more time.
Dick and?
Jane?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
Dick and Jane. Now, there are many people, mature, more mature than anybody else, but there are grandparents of kids and teachers who learn to read through Dick and Jane. Did you by any chance?
I don't think so.
Well, I did. I saw Dick, I saw Jane, I saw Spot, I saw Dick and Jane and Spot and all of it, okay? Now, let me share with you in terms of program efficacy. Do you know how many people learn to read for meaning and in life starting with the Dick and Jane series? Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
75 million.
That's a lot.
Yeah. 75 million. It was the predominant reading program 40s, 50s, and middle 60s. Mm-hmm. 75 million. You ready for this now, Sasha? Do you know how many phonics lessons were taught in Dick and Jane?
How many?
None.
Hmm.
You want to hear that again?
Yeah.
None. Okay, so am I saying that phonics is bad? No. But am I also saying that it's a viable sight-based alternative for those kids that don't have a good ear for sounds? Initially, the answer is yes. I do a lot of work with students who are deaf and hearing impaired. And let me share with you a couple of things that might intrigue you. Do you know that deaf individuals do use phonics? Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
But do you know when they start to do phonics for the most part?
It's after they start.
Learned how to read. And do you know why? It's simple. Phonics has value.
Yeah.
It has value. I mean, you learn that, boy, this, I can use this with this particular process. What this does is it enhances my ability.
Mm.
How am I doing so far?
Good. I think you're like having some light bulb moments, hopefully, for listeners on, you know, thinking critically. And I think thinking in a more open-minded way, because as you said, we are kind of spoon-fed, this is how we do it, this is the way to do it, but at the same time, we have all these kids that are struggling, so
let's get and that's my argument. That's my argument with when we get stuck in, when we put on our instructional blinders, and we're told that there's only one way to fly, okay? And that's when the label makers come in. That's what drives me, that just annoys the hell out of me. Because in the label makers, they set up conditions where they can't fail. And so you're a phonics first, phonics only label maker. And the kid ain't getting it in a large group, and he ain't getting it in a small group, and he ain't really getting it in one-on-one. And if he is getting it, it's so freaking infinitesimally, I'll get that word out, small.
Yeah.
Okay. It's so slow, and the kids are showing 2 and 3 months growth for 10 months in a program when measured by reading comprehension. Well, when the heck are they going to catch up? And then when they don't get it, you know what we do then? Do we say we've made a mistake? Hell no. You know what we then say? We take the biggest label of all, and we say, well, the problem is the kid is dyslexic. And he's got audio phonological difficulties. And now what does he need? More intense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired of that. I don't buy it. I mean, I've worked with kids with IQs of 45 and 50 who are all of a sudden reading for meaning commencement to their cognitive ability.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm out. That's why I called my program failure free. I couldn't find a damn kid that failed.
All right. Well, that's a good segue. Tell us about your program and which you have been, but a little bit more on where people can go to learn more from you and learn about your program.
Yeah. A couple of things. Number one, www.failurefreeonline.com. And when they go there, I love to talk to people. You noticed that already. I can help them if they'd like to schedule a consultation. We're very, very happy. But there's also a way for them to do a free lesson. And the beauty of the program is you'll see if it's a good fit from the very first lesson on. We put them in there and you'll see kids, reading for meaning with fluency from the very first lesson. They're reading that passage. Now, are they cured? No. But are we giving hope? Yes. And that's the main thing. And we do it because we know that there are certain things that are essential in the teaching of reading for our kids. And by the way, let me get back to the three characteristics. So ND is neurologically diverse. Let's find their strength as opposed to spending all the damn time on the weakness. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, I'm giving now we're going to start getting into a lot of the meat that parents and teachers can do as well. So ED stands for environmentally denied. And failure-free reading is, again, based on three words. And these are the three words critical to comprehension. And that is reading is relating. Reading is relating. Reading is relating. Reading is relating. No kid can read for meaning. No kid can read if they can't relate to the content. And what we have a lot of times, we have kids who are cognitively impaired. We have kids that are coming from another culture. We have kids that are economically deprived. Would you agree with all of that?
Yeah, for sure.
And so when they're coming to school, they're coming in many cases with huge gaps in general knowledge, background. So what we have to make sure is we have to make sure that there's a good fit between what it is we're asking the kids to read and what they have, what they're able to relate to. So if they can't relate to it, then they can't read it. And how, what are things that they can't relate to? Well, that's what I call the roadblocks to reading comprehension. But before I get to that, I want to get to the last characteristic, which is LD. And LD doesn't mean learning disabled. LD means language deprived or language denied. And I want to share with your audience a one word key to a one word key that will dramatically, absolutely, never fail improve the reading comprehension level of all readers, whether 6, 16, or 66.
Let's hear.
Did I intrigue you on that?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, you ready? Here's the one word key. Vocabulary.
Yes.
Vocabulary, 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 vocabulary. If you want to elevate the reading comprehension level of your students, your child, your spouse, then you have to elevate vocabulary. And Absolutely. That's why one of the things that we teach and one of the things I'm predicated on is that when people are involved in failure-free reading, you are a vocabulary teacher first, a reading teacher second, and a content teacher third, and you can't change the order. And let me give you a statistic that's frightening. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Researchers have found that third grade highest achieving students, those with the best reading comprehension, have a vocabulary superior to lowest performing 12th grade students.
Wow.
So everything we do is designed to enhance their vocabulary. So parents, what can you do to help your child from day one become a vocabulary teacher? And when you do that, here's three more words. I gave you reading is relating, correct?
Yep.
Here's another three that every parent and every teacher has to remember. Input precedes output. Input precedes output. And what that basically is that when you're looking at vocabulary and language, you have to remember that there are two things called receptive language, that which you can understand, and expressive language, that you can demonstrate. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And remember this, there is at least a 6 month or more gap between what your child or your student can understand as opposed to what they can demonstrate.
So parents and teachers should, as early as possible, be using, you know, a greater variety of vocabulary words. And I mean, we hear this all the time with babies, talking to their babies, right?
Yeah, let me, again, I told you I had five children. When our first child, Tess, when we found out that we were going to have Tess, and Tess was in the womb, at night I would go to my wife and to Tess, and I would go, Tess, this is your dad, and I love you, can't wait for you to come out. And then I would say, and the word for today is kinesiology. And kinesiology means the study of movement and muscles. Now, did I expect Tess to know kinesiology when she came out? The answer is no. But did I start to make sure that she was comfortable with it, advanced vocabulary? The answer was absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that if you're going to reading to your child in preschool, it's a wonderful activity because it's a wonderful it's a wonderful way to build language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so it's always, and when I say language, I mean vocabulary. I mean the ability to express oneself and the ability to understand. So what it's saying is this. You've got to give some time for assimilation to occur. You have to have some time between what comes into the system and then what comes out. For example, when this session is over, I know your friends and your colleagues are going to say, how the hell was that Dr. Joe? Was he any good? And I hope that you're very honest with them. And you say, I got to tell you something. That guy was fantastic. He just knocked the socks out of me, and time just flew because he was the best of the best. And they say, oh, the best of the best. Well, tell me something. And you go, and nothing comes out. And nothing comes out because even though you've learned a lot, you need time to assimilate it.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the thing that a lot of teachers have to remember, especially this time of the year. Even though you're getting a lot of things into the system, they, your kids may not have had an opportunity to demonstrate that they're absorbing it. Yeah. Which then gets to my next three words. You ready?
Yep.
Never give up. Never give up, never give up, never give up, never give up. So, why is it that a kid can't relate to the material? Well, because traditional reading material, and if I do anything, if Failure Free has done anything, and if Failure Free reading material stands out, it's because we present the content in the most comprehensible way, because we eliminate in our print, and by the way, Frida Epert at the University of California, Riverside, she's just a brilliant researcher. She makes a statement that every parent, every educator, every person has to remember, and that is text, T-E-X-T, the print, does matter in the teaching of reading. Text does matter in the teaching of reading. And what we're saying is that contained in traditional reading material are what we call reading roadblocks. Did you know that?
What types of roadblocks?
Okay. Let me share with you what the roadblocks are to our kids. One is real simple. And again, it's all premised on reading is relating. Does this all make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So what are things that our kids, regardless of age, can't relate to? Well, the biggest one, you know, straight off, uncommon names, dates, and places.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Given?
For sure.
Yeah. The other is abundant use of pronouns, because they lose who the pronouns are being referred to.
Okay, that makes sense.
So they're losing comprehension on that. Then the next is, and this is one a lot of people aren't aware of, syntax or sentence structure. We now know that there are that how a sentence is written is as important as the idea that you're trying to convey. And I'll give you two sentences. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The man drove the car. The car was driven by the man. In terms of deep meaning, is there any difference in meaning trying to convey between the man drove the car and the car was driven by the man?
No.
Exact same thing, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Which one will be read easy?
The first one.
For no other reason that it's a simple, positive, active, declarative sentence.
Yeah.
And the second one, it's a passive sentence. In which you change the object action orientation, you add a prepositional phrase, you use more words in a more cumbersome manner to say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Now, grammar is overlooked. Mm. And especially in beginning reading programs, you'll see beginning reading stories where the parents reading aloud to their child, and you see a lot of quotation marks, commas, exclamation points, sentences that begin with and, but, or nor. You know what's wrong when you begin a sentence with and, but, or nor?
And then it's in those beginning readers.
It's not a sentence. It's a phrase. So syntactically, it's very complex.
Yeah.
So uncommon names, dates, and places, pronouns, awkward sentence structure, sophisticated or difficult vocabulary, and then the biggest one, repetition. Oh, idiomatic expression, figurative speech. This is very much for our parents out there, because they've learned this. They are raising, especially the kids on the spectrum. They are spectrum kids are literal learners in a figurative world.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that confuses them the most is idiomatic expression, figurative speech.
Yeah, it's so confusing.
You learn that you have to be concrete. You have to be specific.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the last is, here's the biggest, repetition. Repetition, 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 repetition. We now know Chuck Hargis, a friend of mine, he used to be professor emeritus at the University of Tennessee. He did a study when he looked at one skill that as the literacy level of the kids dropped, regardless of age, regardless of grade, the lower the reading ability of the kids, the greater the need for this skill. And you know what it was?
That repeated reading?
Repetition.
Yeah.
That and if you're a parent of a kid on the spectrum, or if your kid, Gates knew in 1930, coming on 100 years, when he studied kids who were intellectually disabled, he found that the lower the IQ, and I'm just using it as a method of description, the lower the IQ, the greater the number of times it had to be said. You're a former teacher. Anybody mm-hmm. tell you in your wildest imagination? Remember when you were coming out of college and first went into to work those first couple of years? Did mm-hmm. anyone ever tell you in all your training how important repetition was?
Probably not. Now you know that you think about it, really. But when
but
you're,
you sure
when you're
as
on
hell
the job,
you sure as hell learned it real quick.
Yeah, I know. Right away, you're like, okay.
In fact, that's one of the things that you say. The thing is, how many times am I going to say this damn thing before I go across the table and rip their heart out? but there is an antidote to that.
And what's that?
And the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. And in this case, the Lord giveth. You know what it is?
What?
The computer. That when programmed properly, and that's a big when. And I've spent 35 years of my life programming them properly, not, you know, I mean, developing programs that capitalize on the strength. The one thing that, you know, the one thing that a computer can do that we can't do?
What?
It's infinitely patient.
It's true.
It will say the same stupid thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So what I said was, what would happen if we created passages, stories that control for all of these variables and put it in a situation that's based on spaced learning, that we teach words to phrases, phrases to paragraphs, paragraphs to pages, and in failure-free, we teach one page at a time. But the next page is a continuation of the story, so that by the 10th and 12th page, they're reading a booklet, many for the first time in their lives with fluency and comprehension.
That's amazing. Well,
it is.
You've given us a lot here, Dr. Joe. We've covered a lot.
We blew your 20 minutes, didn't
I know.
We?
I'm like 30, you know, wherever. No, this has been really great. And I think that you are encouraging a lot of people to think differently, as opposed to like, this is what I just got to try and try and try the same thing, but to explore different ways to especially approach our most challenging readers. And I think a lot of people will be checking out your program and seeing if that is a good fit, because you've really given some great examples and some great testimonials. So thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you, Sasha. And to the parents, remember, if you always do what you always done, you always get what you always got. And the issue is not your kid in terms of remediating the deficit. The issue is finding the strength in your kid and setting up the conditions in which they can have a successful reading experience. If it doesn't work, move on. Find something that does. And never, ever give up. Reading is relating. Input precedes output. You've got kids who are neurologically diverse, environmentally denied, language deprived. Remember that it's vocabulary first. And don't beat your kid up. And teachers, you work your butt off and you're not seeing noticeable growth given the amount of time and energy that you're putting into And if it's just incremental growth, that ain't enough. It's time for you to go to the director and say, okay, we're going to try something different. This Lockovich seems like he's onto something. Let's try it. And if you're a director and you're sitting at a parent meeting and you're trying to justify why a kid's been in 3 years in your program, coming in at a first grade level and 3 years later is barely at a second grade level, it's time to start thinking out of the box. If you always do what you always done, you always get what you always got.
Yes, great summary. Well, thanks again, Dr. Joe.
Good. And try those sample lessons. Call me. I'm ready for a consultation, and life is good. Sasha, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.